Welcome to all of us here, the 2021 annual edition of Planet Waves. This is the reading for Aries, Aries Rising, and Aries Moon. Welcome. Thank you for always being the first sign. I almost always start these audio and video readings with Aries. Aries being the sign of the zodiac that anchors us into the reality of the physical plane, that turns the key to the cosmic ignition, and that generally gets things started. So it is a good place to start. And I am now officially 1 minute into what is going to be 14 or so hours of presentation. I'll be with you today for about 70 minutes, maybe a little bit more. And we'll figure out what this new era in astrology is all about. As you know, there are many really significant changes. 2020 was an absolute bear. The astrology was just so over the top that we got this response in the world that I don't think anybody was expecting. It was certainly extraordinary astrology. There are a few holdovers in your chart that I will get to in this first segment. By holdovers, I mean from the events of 2020 that were focused in Capricorn. And there's still some of that left, and it is significant. However, despite that and all the other things that are happening, most of which are going to be in Aquarius, which is a whole new energy field for us, for the world, since there hasn't been much going on in Aquarius since 2012, and that was Neptune. And the effect of Neptune was ubiquitous or invisible, depending on how you think of it. What was going on, as with everything involving Neptune, was not being noticed at the time, but we're living under the full effects. And now we have a whole new wave of Aquarius astrology coming, a sign, by the way, intimately connected to your own. However, what I want to start with saying is that despite all of these other things that are going to be, you know, present in the astrology and that I'll be talking about in this reading and other presentations, the single most important thing in your astrology right now, and the greatest benefit that you have, if we are to use astrology as any form of a map, a metric, a timing device, a psychological tool, spiritual growth tool, whatever purpose we could want to use astrology for, the one thing that matters the most, in my opinion, to you is Chiron in your birth sign. This is a long-term transit. Let's just get a quick metric on when Chiron begins to make its exit into Taurus. It's been sufficiently far in the future that I did not have that memorized, but now we will check 2026. Chiron makes its first entrance into Taurus, and then its second entrance in April of 2027. So the phase out of Chiron in your birth sign, one of the most important transits of your life, is between 2026 and 2027. That means we have all of 21, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and then part of 26 and 27. So that is a solid 5 years, plus a little fringe. And then Chiron remains active, but in a very different way for you. And what Chiron gives you is an ability to use your awareness in a way, and also in a very unusual way, let's put it that way, and also to thread the needle on difficult issues where it might be otherwise extraordinarily challenging to get a grip. So Chiron gives you a utility. And it's likely that, you know, you've been aware of Chiron in your sign, which was a phase in from 18 into 19, the spring of 18 into the spring of 19. Similar way, Chiron makes its phase out in the spring of 26 into the spring of 27. There is a lot of disinformation about Chiron on the internet. There are some pretty bad books also. There are a couple of really good books. I strongly suggest you read the best book about Chiron, which is Chiron and the Healing Journey by Melanie Reinhart. Though she takes a, let's say, serious and sometimes somber view of Chiron, it is nonetheless one that is oriented on growth and on healing, and that is ultimately life-affirming rather than a defeatist view, because it's very easy to look around on the internet and find all this wounded healer stuff about Chiron and to adapt a pessimistic or even, as I said, defeatist view of Chiron, and that would be to miss the point entirely. The way that you know that you're getting good information about Chiron is that it is useful. It is utilitarian. It is not strictly utilitarian, but it is spiritual in the sense of this is going to help you solve your problems. It's going to help you identify your problems. Chiron is a gentle and truly compassionate, really incredible teacher as these planetary energies come. I believe they are all in some way mentors. I happen to have very early on devoted, let's say, placed my studies under the spiritual care of Chiron. And that has provided an ethos and a focus. And so almost everything you hear me say in astrology is going to be through the filter of or the viewpoint of what I have learned Chiron is about. And I want to do my best to convey to you what some of that is about. There are a few excellent key phrases for Chiron. I do not use the wounded healer. No one really knows what that means. No one really understands it. The wounded healers certainly exist, and I'm going to figure you ain't one of them. So let's just set that aside. That would be a topic for an article, but it's not a useful expression. It is largely a misunderstanding. Now, as for what is useful, Chiron's first keyword was given to it by the astronomer who discovered it, a guy named Charles Kowal, a truly Chironic figure in that he lived the concept of what he said Chiron was about, which was it is a maverick. So Dr. Kowal was a stand-out guy and a stand-up guy and had a great many planetary discoveries to his name, though the most famous is Chiron, discovered in 1977. So we're coming up on the Chiron return of Chiron, which will happen shortly after it leaves your birth sign. And what he said about Chiron was, this thing is a maverick. It stands out. It is different from everything else. It was in, at the time, was in an orbit that no one knew things existed in, a kind of a transplanetary orbit that crossed the orbits of Saturn and Uranus. I know there's some discussion about whether it actually crosses the orbit of Uranus, but currently Chiron is moving more slowly than Uranus, which means it's going to be outside the mean orbit of Uranus. So that's what I mean when I say that Chiron is functioning as an outer planet in Aries right now, which gives it quite a bit of mojo. And so Chiron grants the ability to stand out. It almost makes it a necessity to stand out and stand apart. And that's an Aries trait anyway, but what Chiron brings to this is depth. It's easy to stand out in ways that are not especially useful or exciting or oriented on anything creative or productive. We live in a society of people who are constantly striving and vying to get attention. This has become a kind of a mania in the era of social media, and that's not what we mean when we talk about Chiron standing out as a maverick. Now, Maverick was a rancher, and the interesting thing about Mr. Maverick was that he refused to brand his cattle because it was so cruel to burn their skin with a red hot iron. Can you imagine doing this your whole life as a rancher, having to put a piece of iron in the fire and with your brand, which is where the word brand comes from, and then burn that into the flesh of a living creature? And so Mr. Maverick refused to do this. That's a very interesting thing. And what we find about people with a prominent Chiron is that there is something about them that is generally in a state of refusal to conform. To conform to the prevailing lunacy of society. And so what Chiron is granting you is this ability to be the distinct entity, the unique being that you actually are. I had a fourth grade teacher named Mrs. Fennelly who was so adamant in her guidance against using the word unique that I still remember it. And she probably said this back in 1975. So if I remember it half a century later, close to it, she was making a point. And that said, you are unique. One of the few things in the entire universe that can be said to be unique is a person, and that is you. But we have had so much of our lives spent crushing our uniqueness, our individuality, our curiosity, our optimism, our just general craving for participation. So many forces, starting usually with our parents, who don't necessarily know quite what they're doing, followed up by various forms of teachers and ministers and whoever else may get into the act to attempt to crush people and make them like everybody else. And so one of the healing crises of Chiron, as it moves through your sign, as it makes the conjunction to your sun, which may have already happened if you're born early in the sign, but generally where the sun exists in someone's chart, there's going to be a couple of other points at least, or going through your rising sign, making a conjunction to your ascendant degree. As this happens, the healing crisis, which is something that does often show up with Chiron, the healing crisis of that transit is likely to be some eruption of need to be who you are, the need to stand out, and to stand out as who you are, not standing out for its own sake. So just to put that a different way, Chiron does not stand out for the sake of doing so. Chiron stands out, for example, for the sake of refusing to cause just incredible pain to your livestock. They have a hard enough life. And the compassion, by the way, of that move by the rancher, Mr. Maverick, is stitched right into the heart and soul of what Chiron is about. The purpose of Chiron is to recognize and alleviate suffering in a world that seems to go out of its way to perpetuate it. And so it is, would be rather wholesome and helpful of you to identify with this concept of alleviating suffering, of alleviating pain and struggle. And that begins with yourself, because you will be shown the ways in which you are struggling. And I would suggest here that with Chiron in your birth sign or rising sign or near your moon, that the thing that you and nearly all people, and this is going to become a general theme in society, struggle with, is the ability to express who you actually are. And the obstacles created to doing this, and there are many of them, have this cascading effect that essentially creates a society of people who just don't know who they are, who just can't express who they are, who struggle every day just to be who they are. And so there are many ways that this is going to call you to share and express yourself. Where we're talking about Chiron, it is a good idea to stick very close to productive activity focused on healing and to take that as your life quest for a while, to take that as your the purpose of your journey. And this can be healing on any level. It could relate to spiritual or psychological or emotional or sexual or physical. However, one of the most distinctive things about Aries is the placement of Virgo on the sixth house. And the sixth is the house of both work and healing, or some would say work and well-being. And Virgo is supportive of an integrative approach to whatever you're doing. So that means to notice where one activity brings in implications in other activities. So a simple example is you might decide you want to exercise more. In the process of exercising more, you might figure out that the diet is very important. And so now suddenly diet and exercise are related. And then in the process of doing that, you might find out that you need to be in a workplace that is both productive, but that also supports your general overall health and well-being. And then one thing leads to another, and you are gradually working your way through the different territories and domains of your life, integrating the things that you need to do. With Chiron in Aries, in your ascendant, or near your sun, or near your moon, and by near I mean in the same sign, where you're likely to start this, where you're likely to pick up the thread of that integration, is this profound need to be yourself. And it is almost universally true that when someone expresses the profound need to be themselves, someone is going to say, no. Not around here. Not on my watch. You're having too much fun. I don't want you to grow because that means that I have to grow. Or I have to go away from you because I can't stand the idea that you're growing. There's a lot of this. It is fairly rare, but it happens that people encounter those whom I would call healing partners once they make this commitment. And as you move into this concept of a person who is real all the time and who is willing to engage the crisis of being real all the time, because when you're real all the time, you stir up some shit. And this is not that popular. And it's especially not that popular in a time in history where there is so much pressure to conform. Political correctness has gone so far over the top. It is now what fully in the territory of what I would call the emotional plague. The simplest way to say what the emotional plague is, that it is the reaction of others and the reaction of society to aliveness, which is to attempt to deaden it, to take those expressing their life force energy as being a threat to those who cannot, who will not, who don't have the courage, or who feel too broken to express their life force energy in some way. Now, I have talked about this in previous readings. I'm going to touch on it briefly in this reading. I imagine that that the respect reading from 2020, the comparable audio reading from 1 year ago, had much more on this, and I would suggest using that as a resource. There's also some articles we'll include on the resource page. But Chiron, still early in your sign, is in a long, gradually separating conjunction to a point called Salacia. Salacia is about emotional and sexual maturity and the integration of emotional and sexual maturity. And so one of the things I'm describing through all of what I'm saying here is a maturing process. We live in what the poet Robert Bly has called the sibling society. It's essentially a society without adults in the room. There's a lot of elders who are not very wise and caught in the Mishigas, in some respects, even worse than the young people, and in a more conflicted way than at any other time in their lives. This is a problem when those who are supposed to be the wise elders are caught in what amount to adolescent dramas. And one of the ways that those adolescent dramas are perpetuated is the permanent infliction of sexual immaturity. So one's personal growth is going to track very closely one's sexual growth. Said another way, it's very difficult to attain any real level of self-actualization, which is another fancy way to say growth, to make oneself fully real, to bring in one's actual being, and also to tap into the deep necessity to do that. So self-actualization is a kind of a state of being, but there's also a concept of self-actualization that it is the drive, it is the tropism, it is the thing coming from this deep spiritual and biological engine that is insistent of maturing, insistent of integrating, insistent of becoming fully human. And it is of profound necessity to fully embrace the whole idea of your sexuality, what it is about, what you feel, what you want, what you've done, what you need, and the way that this interplays with your relationships. And here's where the real challenge comes in, because there are, in long experience of working with people in my own personal life, not that many people who are willing to embrace the sexual growth of their partners. There are some obvious reasons for this. The full spectrum of what you are capable of and curious about in your erotic life is very likely to exceed what can be contained in one relationship. And so that's always a possibility. And so the mere acknowledgement of sexual growth almost always points beyond the relationship. And this makes it very challenging for partners to be supportive unless there's a really special bond and some extraordinarily fortunate karmic thing, or you just happen to find yourself with a person who has devoted themselves to this process in some way, shape, or form. There are individuals around whom people come out. Like, have you noticed this? There's like, you know, I once had a girlfriend many years ago, and all these different men became gay through the process of being in a relationship with her. I didn't become gay. I just basically became more myself, which is doesn't really have a word. But I have noticed there are people who help others become who they are. You could call them thresholders. That's one of the words I have. It is very helpful to find one of these folks, to maybe among your friends. Maybe you keep your ears open, you know, whatever it takes to find someone around whom you can fully be in your truth. And I say this not so much to advocate sexuality as an endpoint, which it is going to be for some people. I think it would be for a lot more people were there not such a kind of a heavy-handed, kind of parochial way of treating people, and sex being conceivable as in the minds of many is nothing but offensive, which is crazy, given that it's how we are created, but rather as the necessary thing to integrate into your whole being, your whole psyche, so that there's no part of you left out, given that very often sex ruled by guilt is the thing that just gets kind of pushed outside and people say, well, I'm going to grow spiritually, but I don't need that sex stuff because that's the lower chakras. I don't need to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, this is not what Chiron is saying. Chiron, particularly conjunct Salacia, and Salacia is going to be in your sign basically for the rest of your life, for 30, 40 years. I don't know how long it's going to be there. Quite a while. I haven't checked that ephemeris in a while, but long decades. Is calling on you to really understand what it is that makes a person a person. And the thing that makes a person is this tap into a universal creative force. And on the physical plane, which is where we are, that universal physical force is accessed in large measure through sexual energy. Okay, I will leave it at that for now. I may have more to say a little bit later on. I will add one last thing, which is that there is a family connection here. One of the reasons why this topic is so controversial and difficult for so many people to access is that the pressure from family for young people to be who the family wants the person to be rather than exactly who the person is almost unbearable. It is even the thought of it is unbearable. And much of that is exercised through attempting to gain control of all forms of vitality, curiosity, artistic expression, creativeness, wanderlust, the willingness to take risks, passion about things that don't matter in the adult world, or that should but get sidelined, and where the simplest way to make children more manageable is to sever that central nerve of sexuality, because it then has a way of deadening everything else. And so as you bring the life force back into these many different facets of yourself under the guidance of Chiron, and as you embrace an integration process, as you embrace a process of total commitment to your growth and your beauty and your being and your healing, one by one, you're going to stretch into these places where there's little bits of pain stashed away, bits of self-doubt stashed away, bits of futility and desperation and longing and need and unfulfilled experiences. But nothing less is, in truth, a healing process. All right, let's take a little intermission. And I'll be back in a moment. All of us here, element of all of us here, is about Aquarius. Today, I'm recording on the 17th of December. Saturn entered Aquarius early this morning, and then in 2 days, Jupiter will enter Aquarius. And then on the winter solstice, there will be the once per 20-year conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. But this has not happened in Aquarius since 1405. Aquarius is the sign of groups. It is the sign of inclusion and exclusion. So anything that can include can also exclude. So like a club, you can be in the club or you can be outside of the club. And so both the inclusion process of being in the club or in the group and the exclusion process are covered by Aquarius. Let's start with a brief introduction to the environment, which means digital. We have now lived for a generation under digital conditions. I would say that the mid-1990s is when the internet was becoming a popular thing. It had been on the cover of every magazine, and most people had AOL by the mid to late 1990s. And in truth, the impact of this kind of technological advent it happens long before anyone knows that it is happening, and it would lead to an interesting question of where we are today, because we are today living with the effects of things that we don't know about yet, or that we've only heard mentioned and may or may not take seriously. But in this generation-long slide into full digital conditions, by which I mean every last thing, right down to posting an order for coffee through your Dunkin' Donuts app and picking it up, and it's paid for, and you don't have to say a word to the person. You just run in and you grab your thing. We are under full digital conditions. And this also means we're under full electrical conditions, which are the precursor to digital. And the upshot of all this is tribalism. This tribalism that we are witnessing is a byproduct of digital and a byproduct of electricity. It was not always that the human race was constantly subjected to the electronically conveyed messages of people, whether that was radio, telephone, television, and all the other stuff that has followed, all the thousand million forms that digital takes, and then digital having completely swallowed all the previous media. This has done very strange things to people. It has, in effect, turned many people into entities that behave robotically. We become like our tools. And it is quite obvious that the human race has become like its tool of being robotic. For example, because people seem to think that society can be turned on and off like a robot. And they seem to think that the human needs that human beings have, we flesh and blood people who like to play with kittens and who like to cuddle puppies and who like to walk up to a horse and puff a little bit of air in her nose and get a little puff of air back, and who like to hold hands on the beach, and who like to have sex, and who like to get together and make music and have conversations, and who like to eat together, are somehow being convinced that none of that is necessary, and not only that, that it is dangerous. Dangerous. Deadly. To exist. This is a complete misunderstanding. It is scientifically and medically inaccurate, and it is not sustainable. And the lack of sustainability is going to go one of two ways. Either people are going to completely succumb and we become a dead society, an idiocracy, or some version of 1984, where people just simply go from one state of fear and oppression to the next, to the next, to the next, or there will be some resistance and pushback, and we will get to experience an entheodromia, a thing that switches and becomes its opposite. And right now, I believe, here, speaking on the first day of Saturn in Aquarius for the long haul, remembering Saturn briefly visited Aquarius in the spring and the first 10 days of summer, and now Saturn is going to be in Aquarius to stay for a few years, which will be followed by Jupiter, and then most significantly followed by Pluto, we are in that interval of decision. We are in that interval of choosing what it means to be a person. And the central question in this matter is, are we driven by our fear of death, or are we driven by the love of existence and of ourselves and one another? And this question has never been more pronounced or poignant or urgent, in that I think that we are really in a point of no return, whichever we may choose. The entire digital revolution has taken place, I believe, two places in astrology, as described by astrology. And I have lots of stuff written about this in case you're curious to explore my documentation of this. And the first one is in your sign. It is in Aries. The reason for this is the transit of Eris through Aries, which begins in the late 1920s and ends in about 30 years. It's like a really, really long transit. Again, I need to have that written on the wall, along with a few other things, but there has been nearly a century of Eris and Aries, which begins in the late 1920s. With the first commercial radio stations being licensed, the first transistor being patented. Incredibly, it was the size of a coffee can. That wouldn't work in a digital watch. And the RCA experiments in television. Electricity was in its nascency. Pretty much cities were all powered, and most rural areas had minimal power, enough to like for electric light bulbs. There were telephones starting to appear most places. Most places still had party lines at that point, which is an interesting property of digital, which is the incomplete erasure of privacy. So we get a number of properties with digital. The second sign is Aquarius. Aquarius being your 11th house, and that's the place where you express your need to be among other people, your need to be a member of a physical human society. So Aries has what some astrologers call a natural chart. You have Aries on the 1st, Taurus on the 2nd, and so forth. And that brings us to Aquarius on the 11th. And whatever sign someone has on the 11th house, they are going to express themselves in society as a member of society through that sign. You happen to have Aquarius there. This is very useful. It also means that you're about to have Saturn moving through this angle of your chart now for basically till 2023 and less than one year of Jupiter moving through this angle. And so you are going to fully experience the changes that are being imposed on people, and you are going in a very bold and direct way, right? Because, you know, it's possible to experience the astrology in a less direct way. It's possible to experience it in a more direct way. You happen to be standing right where you can see and feel and experience and notice and observe on the most tangible social level the changes that society is going through. And the presence of Chiron in your sign is going to be the superpower that gives you the strength to be yourself under what may become extremely oppressive conditions. Now, I don't know how oppressive they're going to get, but I'm telling you that locking all of society in its home, shutting down the schools, the universities, the theaters, the healthcare clinics, Madison Square Garden, and just about everything else, every restaurant practically, is oppressive. And the fact that we don't notice that it's oppressive is really strange. The fact that we don't notice this is a total inappropriate overreaction, getting no actual medical benefit, is very strange. And it leads me to wonder what's next. It leads me to wonder how far people are going to go believing something and being willing to completely sacrifice any semblance of the life they had before, any semblance of their freedom, and any semblance of their actual unique expression of self. And so now we can expand this concept of Chiron in your sign, this thing that is this kind of cosmic bee in your bonnet to make sure that you're actually really who you are at all times. Well, now we see there's a purpose for this underlying drive. There's a way to a place to express this underlying drive that is vital, that you take this quest for self-actualization out of your purely inner space and into the world around you, and make sure that you make room for yourself in the world around you. And that you further bring people with you, and take what I see as being a social leadership role in making sure that that your freedom is also the freedom of your peers, your friends, your colleagues, and whoever else might be included in the 11th house, which I think of the 11th house as being a metaphor for society, or in a personal life, a metaphor for you, your friends, and all of their friends. So it's the people you're going to meet when you get invited to your friend's party, and you might not have known that they had they were in the Frisbee League, and then you meet all the Frisbee League people at the party. So that you, your friends, and then their friends. That's the most pragmatic way to think of the 11th house, the utilitarian. It's a way that's going to actually use it, you know, like a pen or a pencil. That's where you're going to feel it. So what we now are about to experience are more than 2 years of Saturn in Aquarius. And this could go one of two major ways. It could go either in the direction of certain people who really have that need, who have that gene turned on, who have that passion and curiosity for existence, are going to be brought out and insist on being who they are, because it's the only thing to do. Really nothing else to do. However, in a context of what I believe will be the continued excuse-making for the what will be rolling lockdowns, and what rolling lockdowns, all they mean, the only thing they mean, is disrupting the social order. You know, you might disagree with me on this, but you would be very hard pressed to find a scientific and medical basis, an actual scientific and medical basis. So to me, it seems like the only purpose of this is to disrupt society. And we are being told to stay apart from each other, to be afraid of each other, and to be afraid of breathing the same air. And guess what? That's the only air that there is. It's the same air. There's only one atmosphere. We are always breathing the same air. We're breathing the air that Buddha and Jesus and my Uncle Howard breathed. All the same air. So you now have a special calling with Saturn moving into the social angle of your chart, the sign Aquarius, the sign of all of us here. At the same time, you have Chiron powering up your personal growth. You are one of the most likely people to want to stand up and be yourself, and to stand up and insist that you get to be among the people that you care about, that you get to go to a concert, that you get to have an art exhibition, and not settle for putting the opening of one of the most important artists of the 20th century, for example, on the internet. But this will take courage. This is the whole thing. And this is where Chiron comes in. It takes courage because, first of all, you have to challenge beliefs that have basically been beaten into us with a 2x4. Or at the point of a knife or gun, i.e. a death threat. And that is the actual definition of courage, right? It is courageous to stand up enough, right? To stand up at a public meeting or to challenge someone in some position of authority that you find doing something immoral or even something that just could be done better. But it's another thing to rise to a similar challenge when there is a threat of death being leveled at you. And this will take an exceptional degree of scrutiny, a degree of commitment to truth. And you're lucky, therefore, to have Chiron with the help of Salacia and with the help of Eris in your chart. So we'll get to Eris in a moment, because that relates back to a Capricorn theme that I would like to, you know, continue to develop a bit, because all the powerful astrology just about of 2020, the thing that really knocked down the 10 pins, happened in Capricorn. And you still have some power here to reclaim the growth process of Pluto in Capricorn as being more than a strictly destructive force. So let's touch on that briefly. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, you have your entire life had Eris in your birth sign. It creeps along. There's a few super duper old fogies in like in their 90s who don't have this, but the rest of us have it. And so it has crept through our, wherever we have Aries, for our entire life, and it will be there in the case of most people listening for the rest of the rest of their lives. And Eris has been the thing that has described this new concept of the human under electrical conditions, the electric person, basically. But there's another angle to this, which is the person who just, even more powerfully than Chiron, because it's so much slower. Eris moves 10 times slower than Chiron, and Chiron is a slow mover. Chiron has a 51-year orbit, and Eris has a 558-year orbit. And the slower something is in astrology, the deeper and longer the impact that it will have. And in a way similar to Chiron, Eris is an integrative factor in that it is driving you to claim back the cast-off parts of yourself. One by one. For both men and women in different ways, but in ways that in modern times where things are being so stripped of gender that even claiming gender and sex, as in if you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. If you are, you may be something in between, but the majority of people are men and women, and there's a lot of pressure to give that up in some way. So the reclaiming process of Eris in Aries is beautiful, crucial, and necessary. All of these cast-off parts just serve to cultivate chaos in the psyche. You know, there's no growth benefit from chopping off parts of your consciousness and leaving them in a trunk in the attic or someplace. Pluto, through Capricorn, has lasted since early 2008. This, when Pluto entered Capricorn in 2008, the entire economy was shaken by an earthquake, originally called the subprime mortgage crisis, sometimes called the Big Short. I highly recommend watching this movie to understand the impact of Pluto in Capricorn on financial markets, which in some way we are all just basically living on the crumbs of. But for you, Pluto in Capricorn has been about focusing your drive to do the right thing in your life, to make your career, as it's sometimes called, or your vocation to be the thing that you connect to the power of your soul's growth. And there's been a lot of drama in Capricorn the past 3 years. We have seen a lot of stuff just blow sky-high, ridiculous things. And it at first had seemed to me like Saturn in Capricorn, which dates back to late 2017, would be a kind of a cleanup process. And this may have worked very effectively for people on the individual level. After all those years of Pluto and Capricorn, Pluto, you know, basically demolishing things, to me it seemed as if Saturn in Capricorn could be a kind of a like a clearing runway. And with Jupiter there the past year, also about revitalizing the passion of who and what you want to do. Now, you're likely to find those from additional places in your chart, and you have a diversity of influences encouraging you to do what feels good and to take some chances to let that happen. What remains of what has been a very impressive dialogue between your sign, Aries, and Capricorn, this 10th house placement, which is where, in a way very similar to the ascendant, but in a more tangible way, we strive to be ourselves in the 10th house, right? The 10th house is what you want to be known for, but it's also what you take responsibility for. And let me cover Pluto and Eris first, and I'm going to talk about Pholus for a second, because that's worth like knowing about and writing on a little piece of paper and keeping in your pocket, which you see every day. The remaining main contact, by which I mean an exact aspect between Aries and Capricorn, is the Pluto Eris square. So here we have one planet that takes 2.5 centuries to go around, and another one that takes 5.5 centuries to go around, and they are in a square aspect. And this was exact through much of 2020 and 2021. Given how slowly these planets move, it's impressive that it passes by so quickly, though we are in the second and last year of the exact aspect. And what this is talking about is it is a fine-tuning device for you to help you do what you need to do in terms of achievement, right? This is less about social dynamics and more about the determination to fulfill your mission. And you have good help from Pluto in Capricorn. Even though we could dismantle the last 12, 13 years of your life and find all kinds of chaos, we might find a through line of that chaos stripping away things and leaving you with something crucial. And it's that something crucial, meaning the crux of the matter, that I suggest you focus on and stick with. Something you may not be able to say to very many people. The 10th is also the house of it's lonely at the top, right? So you've got to do this thing. You may not have necessarily so much support on this mission. You might, but it exists irrespective of the support that you have, right? It's the thing that you got to do. And there will be people who try to sidetrack you, distract you, and derail you from that. There'll be a few who want to help you, but it doesn't matter. In the end, it's about that thing you have to do. And what the contact to Eris, remembering this is an exact 90-degree angle, so they are in complete contact, conversation between them, perhaps tense, but the beauty of squares is that they happen. You don't have to reach for a square to happen. A square is not lose it or use it. A square is do it or you get your ass kicked, and then you get your ass kicked and you decide if you're going to do it or not, and then you generally show up for whatever it is. And so this is a fine-tuning device of you being able to adapt your particular strangeness, your particular unique urgency of existence to your soul's purpose. So you're getting that meeting, kind of the best of both worlds, of Pluto working its way through late Capricorn, providing you with opportunities to not only do things, but to go back to things that you thought you wanted to do, but you couldn't quite achieve it because you didn't quite have the energy. You couldn't pull it off. Maybe you didn't feel like you had the chops. Maybe you quote unquote failed. And now you get to re-engage that. So I would strongly suggest that you be clear about your, you kind of do a clarifying exercise around your professional drive, and that you take this opportunity to tune your personality, your psyche, your behavior, your appearance, all these things we could describe as being the first house, to that mission on a day-to-day basis. And there are going to be times when this feels like, you know, the hill is too steep and you've got to just get off the bike and walk it up the hill. And you get there, maybe it takes you a little longer. It's a little lower risk to walk the bike up the hill than it is to struggle riding it sometimes. And then you slowly get in shape. Maybe the first five hills on the bike trip, you walk the bike up, and then the sixth one, oh, wow, suddenly I can ride this up. Whatever it takes, walk up the hill. Get up the hill. See what it's like up there. As you do this, as you practice, you will gain strength and advantages. Though there is so much in the world that is completely and utterly screwed up right now, one of the things that exists is a huge opening for new things. And the opening for new things is accompanied by a lot of people who are quite knocked down and lacking for resources that you may have. And of course, your most important resource is your chutzpah. This is the thing that you can get by on when you've got absolutely nothing else. You can have not a penny to your name. You can be in debt. You can be feel like you failed 20 times. But if you have chutzpah, if you have the willingness to try and dare, that's it. The world has opened back up for you. And so I suggest you use this combination of influences that I've described to find your way through whatever it is. Find your way through the oppressive people who all believe something that might be completely ridiculous. And by the way, as the truth comes out, these beliefs are going to be revealed as being increasingly ridiculous and the product of mere conformity. And this is the thing that is your challenge. This whole concept of mere conformity. That cannot be about you. It never was. It never will be if you are going to be a happy person, which is the whole point of this is why we're having this meeting. This is why I'm here speaking to you. It's why you have engaged me to tell you these things. And it can be done. These influences are workable. They are all workable. Now, in a sense, everything is, but Saturn in Aquarius, Jupiter in Aquarius, really, for you, quite workable. The territory, by the way, and the reason that the Saturn and Jupiter transits are so crucial right now, is the territory is for you social. The emphasis has moved from your 10th house to your 11th house. So it's moved from this more professionally oriented thing and achievement oriented and goal oriented without leaving any of that behind, the forum, the reality frame, the zone, the place, literally the place has moved to a social environment. And this is where the greatest anxiety exists. Look, social anxiety disorder existed long before they were telling people to stand 6 feet apart lest they risk murdering one another. And now people have had a year, particularly vulnerable young people and older people, but it seems like this could be anyone, of being beaten with social anxiety 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you can rise above that to any measure and just live like a free person in what's supposed to be a free society, you will gain many advantages. And the thing to do in the first 6 months of 2021 is to get with people as much as possible and expand your social circle physically. Online, that's always happening and all that stuff. The relationships where there is going to be the most power in the relationship, the most advantage gained in the relationship, the most actual one thing leads to another type of contact and opportunity for you to perform the service you came here to perform and to assist the people you came here to assist and to have the opportunities that you want and that you need, and it's all for all of us, is in-person contact. And with Jupiter in the 11th, that is going to work very well for you. And you have the possibility of being an actual pioneer. A new world has been designated. A new world where we're all just supposed to be terrified all the time. Where there's never a minute of relief. There's never a minute of good news. Well, you got to make your good news. I would say you are in your person the good news. Be the person unafraid. By the way, one of the reasons I'm not afraid is I've used my power of literacy. I've just spent the entire year reading, organizing information, doing tons of original research, interviewing people, and then putting everything in context. And I see exactly what's going on. And it's easy to see that. I have no fear of any of this. And I am a cautious person. So let's take a break and talk about a few other outer planet movements, including Neptune, including Uranus, and a couple of more bits. All right. Time for intermission. I guess that's the Hard Rock Cafe, where the people are just conducting normal conversations to the sound of Hard Rock. In this last segment, I want to talk about a few, three in particular, outer planet transits. We've covered most of the important outer planet transits. We've got, you know, a pulse on Chiron. We've got a pulse on Saturn. We've looked at Pluto quite carefully. There are lots of outer planets, but really I mean the ones that are available in any chart, and then one extra. So I'm going to cover Neptune, Uranus, and Logos. So one of my theories of sun sign astrology is that the signs surrounding one's sign are of supreme importance in understanding what's going on for the sign squished into the middle. And in the case of Aries, this would be to one side Pisces, the last sign leading up to your sign, and in the other direction, Uranus, the which is in Taurus. And so what we get here is what was fairly recently an outer planet conjunction that took place in Capricorn years ago, but still fairly recently, now has spread out. And half of that conjunction is in Pisces, and the other half is in Taurus. So it's more like it's going to be a sextile pretty soon, but not quite. And the sign before yours is like a deeper layer of who you are. So there's something very Piscean about Aries people. You might not know it on the surface, but that's because it's not on the surface. It's down a few layers, and it's reflective of your sensitivity and your imagination and your dream life and an inherently spiritual orientation that is available to you should you choose to notice it. And should you choose to, in some way, dial it in. And in Pisces, we have a long-term visit from Neptune. In Taurus, in the other direction, we get a different quality of energy, a much more grounded, solid, material, sensual, texture-oriented, value-oriented thing called Taurus. And this happens to be the sign associated with, in other words, the sign and house placement together associated with your sense of value, your sense of self-worth, your priorities. That's really the big one for the second house. So in that order, I mean, and self-worth is of tremendous importance because someone can be the most wonderful person in the world, but without self-worth, there's no impetus to express that in some way, and maybe someone doesn't even notice enough to take advantage of it. So on the Pisces side, Neptune in Pisces is creating a very unusual condition in your life and in the world. This is probably better placed in the 12th house where you have it than it is for people who have it other places. However, Pisces with Neptune in the 12th is a caution against essentially making absolutely no sense at all and falling for an inner trip that could be completely delusional in that way that only Neptune can be. So Neptune is associated with all the D words like denial, deception, delusion, drinking, drugs, drama. I probably missed about 10. And then, without Neptune, there would be no imagination. So what we get is this fragile, and it may be the biggest failing of the human experience, is this fragile inspiration, this thin wisp of melody heard on the breeze, which is then very easily corrupted. And it's corrupted through a process that largely involves lying, being lied to, and believing lies. It's all about that. When you come down to what it is that removes any, possibility of Neptune really working in a creative way. And this is often done, well, the deception and the believing and the possibly doing it is part of it, and then drugs and alcohol play a huge role in corrupting what could be, something really beautiful. And we wonder why a lot of the most creative people had extreme alcohol problems. I've been watching a lot of presentations by a writer named Alan Watts, who is just one of the great spiritual writers anywhere near our lifetimes, and his specialty was East meets West. He was the one who, in the most cohate and elegant and grounded and somewhat cautionary way, taught us what Zen is, what Buddhism is, what Eastern spirituality is about. And he had a tremendous alcohol problem. It is difficult to even put those two things into the same idea. It did not stop him from being a absolutely brilliant spiritual writer, but there was this constant, essentially pain-killing thing going on. In any event, be aware that it is possible for the highest and most loving intentions to be corrupted by all of those D words. And the problem with Neptune is that it happens in an unconscious way most of the time. where you don't necessarily even have a clue what's going on. This is the real challenge of Neptune, is seeing when it's happening. And for example, in many public affairs, there's sometimes a 7 or 10 year delay before we figure out how screwed up things are. The iPhone seemed like a perfectly great idea at the time. Oh, you can use it as a phone, you can use it as an internet device, and you can toggle another device to it. That was the original presentation for the iPhone. You can do all three of those things. It's an internet hub, it's a little computer, and it's a phone that can call anywhere in the world. And no one is thinking at that time, oh, they're going to be using this to spy on the entire human race and to forcibly download applications that tell me when I've been near this person who was near that person and so forth, and then you get a notice that says you got to stay home for 2 weeks. That's fucked up. And no one imagined this. And so we're seeing this long delay and this still persistent denial. With you, with Neptune in Pisces in the 12th, it is your inner life that you must focus on and bring a total commitment for truth to your inner life. This can mean a lot of things. I don't know how we do this in an age without good therapy, to sustain that modeling and to model in particular the structure of the psyche that facilitates honesty, and plenty of good therapy was corrupted by Neptune type of things. So monitoring your inner life, monitoring how you feel, knowing how you feel, and constantly cross-checking your inner perceptions against the reality check of the lived world. So that is a bit about that. And of course, monitor your use of substances. I think that is natural, normal, and fun and useful to use some substances some of the time. But that's different from drinking every day, right? There's a lot of differences, right, between mild recreational use or having a good time or, you know, whatever, and being caught in the current. And so monitor that, and then, you know, we're left with things like meditation. Keep an inner focus. The other thing about Neptune is this odd, creeping kind of fear that can take over. And I meant to begin the section with this assertion, but it'll be just as memorable closing with it, and perhaps even more, is that nothing can be called spiritual if it inflicts fear. That's not the purpose of this thing, not very well defined, that we call spiritual. The thing we call spiritual is about learning the freedom from fear, learning how to maneuver yourself out of fear, being free from fear. With Neptune, the challenge is knowing when you're feeling something. That's the challenge. So perhaps more on that another time, and your thoughts are welcome. Next outer planet transit, perhaps a little bit easier to grasp. Neptune is hard to explain. We'll include my article this year about Neptune on the resources page to kind of expand the palette of what's available there. There being Neptune. Next, Taurus is the second house. You could hardly want a better second house than Taurus. Taurus wants what's right and what's real and what is true. Taurus wants quality. Taurus wants things that feel good, that aren't just expensive. The second house is also about your value structure, and it is about your priorities. Now, there is a transit going on that we could certainly do a lengthy dissertation about how it's had all these crazy effects in 2020, Uranus in Taurus, which began in early 18 with Chiron. It made a one-year phase-in to its new sign, so it's well underway now. And this is a radical influence. This is about really making some decisions, but allowing yourself to make decisions on a whole new basis. One of the things we get with Uranus is a sense of experimentation, a sense of willing to risk something, and like Chiron, the impulse to do something different, to feel something different, to experiment with something different. This is all great, and I would suggest being mindful of your finances such that if you are going to gamble in your finances, that you at least hedge your bet and maybe gamble a third of what you have or half of what you have, or you put up a third and you ask other people to put up money. That you be mindful about that, because there can be wild turns of fortune where Uranus is involved in a money house, and it is. But the underlying theme here is be bold about being different. Different from the known. Different from what you expect yourself to be. To get out of that constant routine that humans tend to get involved with so easily. All right, last outer planet transit, one you're probably not going to hear about anywhere else, and I may not have mentioned any time lately. Slow mover called Logos moving through your seventh house. Logos is fairly close to the beginning. I have it at approximately 6 degrees of Libra right now. And it is in your relationship house. Logos is the big daddy of the Greek concepts, which is the one that leads to any form of logic, language, or structured thought. Things must make sense with Logos. The whole concept of Logos is about things making sense and also being conveyable into ideas that can be expressed in language. All right, here's the thing to be mindful of. One of the most important ways you can navigate through your reality is by noticing whose language you speak, whose language you understand, whose logic you follow. And this is a practical, easily applied test of whether anything makes sense. Do you actually understand it? And when you examine the person or the writing or the thought or the community or the concept or the relationship carefully, do you follow the logic? It doesn't mean so much to you agree with the logic. Right, people are very quick to disagree these days, if you've noticed that. Well, I don't agree. It's just a matter of opinion. Well, not so fast. First, check if you follow the logic. If you're trying to follow the logic and you reach a point of disagreement, there's going to be a step in the logic where that takes place. Right? It should be a sharp instrument, not a blunt instrument. Logic is a sharp instrument. Logic wants clarity. And so what I suggest you do is you experiment in your relationships with Logos, with does this make sense? What reality is this part of? What is the basis of that logic? What larger thing is that logic part of? And then use this as a navigational tool to weave and wend your way through the world of people, the world of events, the world of experiences, the world of relationships, the world of all those things which really just come down to human contact, the human experience, which is either about communicating, sharing, or feeling. And see what adds up, right? Hear people out. Figure out where they're coming from. And instead of doing that Sisyphus thing of trying to push the rock up the hill, go to where it's a little easier. You know, you don't have to convince anybody of anything. Rather, work with what people are already convinced of. Because just about everyone is convinced of something. And many people aren't really questioning it. But you are in a different position where you need to be aware of all these things people aren't normally aware of, don't normally take much interest in. And move gently through that. Move gently through this world of opinions and inclusion and exclusion and all of this pressure to change your mind. Somebody wants to change your mind, which seems to be a daily occurrence for everyone. Draw them out. Find out where they're coming from. Find out how much they know. You'll feel better. You'll figure out most people don't know so much. And then occasionally, on a really good day, you'll meet someone who does. Okay. On that note, it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad to get this started. I reckon you'll be seeing this on New Year's Eve at the latest. I would strongly suggest checking out your sign rising, your moon sign. And if you've got access to all 12, check out the dominant signs in that of close partners and spouses and all that kind of thing. And you may certainly share this reading with anyone you feel would benefit from it. Of course, if they super duper benefit from it, maybe suggest that they put a little into the kitty. But I want to make sure that if this work is useful to somebody, that it gets to where it needs to be. I'll go out with a little bit of music in the All of Us Here Cafe. Thank you for your trust and for your business and your participation. I'm easily found. You can write to efc@bookofblue.com. And if I see it, I'll write back to you. Okay. Lots of love. And bye for now.
some things.
Go down.
How many is this chair?
15 seconds.